of the Power of Us podcasts are not licensed therapists, medical professionals, legal advisors, or certified experts. The views and opinions expressed by the host are based on personal experiences and are intended solely for informational, inspirational, and educational purposes.
Hello, my name is JJ Holly.
And I'm Monica Daniel.
And welcome to another episode of The Power of Us. Today, it is our pleasure to welcome the Montgomery County Sheriff, Wesley Doolittle. Sheriff, welcome to the program.
Good morning, y'all. Thank y'all for the invitation.
Thank you for taking the time out. We know you're really busy with, you know, the little county just north of Houston that, you know, isn't growing. Nothing's going on.
Right on.
So tell us, how did you become Sheriff of Montgomery County?
It was a lot of hard work. So I know y'all were around and were able to watch my campaign and things like that. I saw that we had a need for a sheriff here in Montgomery County. I didn't believe things were being done that folks in our community wanted to see. Programs, community participation, efficiency of the office, and things like that. So I decided that I would run for sheriff and try to make it a little bit better.
Well, we appreciate anybody who puts their name on a ballot. It just takes a lot of, you know, like you said, it's a lot of hard work, takes a lot of guts to put yourself out there. And, you know, you kind of become a target to a certain extent. And it's something you have to really love, being a public servant.
I think so. I think you have to have a strong stomach. You have to be mentally resilient. You have to be able to take a punch. Not physically, maybe sometimes, but.
Well, we hope not.
In your line of work, maybe.
Right. I think y'all, I know we talked about this a lot, but y'all saw the road rage deal over in Magnolia.
Yes. Why don't you talk to us about that a little?
It was just a fluke. It was just a wild deal, you know. Not very often you drive up on crimes in progress randomly, you know, so it was just as much a surprise to me as it was anybody. So we just, you know, just handle business. And, you know, I tell our deputies and the folks in law enforcement that you take an oath of office, which means you swear to protect not only people's property, but them too, their health and security. And that's the basic function of a police officer. That's what we're here to do. And it doesn't matter what your rank is, what your title is, or your time and grade. You know, we all have that obligation. We should be able to perform those services at a very basic level. So, you know, it's just something that you do.
Yes. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to be involved in law enforcement?
Well, my dad was in the Air Force, and I come from a family of military guys. And when I graduated high school, I had worked in that. I was in the ag program at school, so I learned how to weld and things like that. And I went to work as a pipe fitter's helper at a refrigeration business.
Oh, wow.
And I became a pipe fitter and a welder. And I did that for almost 9 years.
Wow.
And
wow.
Went to school at night and learned how to do refrigeration, and they call it HVAC. And, you know, started building some college credits and working toward at least a certificate. And then later on, I earned a couple of degrees in criminal justice, you know. But I think I was just drawn to it after working in refrigeration. And, you know, I had a couple of friends that were highway patrolmen and police officers and stuff. And I'd wanted to go into the military out of high school, and I didn't do it. So I said, you know what, I'm going to do this. I had the opportunity to seize the chance and took a chance on leaving my career and went to work for DPS.
That was a big change.
Yes, it was a huge change, financially, more so than anything. You know, I think when we start out as a trooper, I was making like $25,000 a year.
Wow.
Coming off of a six-figure salary, working in refrigeration. So it was a big pay cut, but it was something that I wanted to do. I was drawn to it. And, you know, started out with DPS and did 22 years with state police as a highway patrolman and narcotics agent, and 13 as a Texas Ranger. So
you already had a pretty long career before you became sheriff of Montgomery County.
A couple decades. And a lot of experience working all over Southeast Texas in the Valley, and learning about crimes, crime trends, criminal behavior, criminal activities, and things. So it was a learning experience, and I continue to learn today. I, you know, worked for Constable Cash for 2 years after I retired as a captain of Precinct 1 Constable's office, and oversaw the Lake Patrol, the background investigations, internal affairs, and things like that. And then oversaw mental health a little bit there. You know, Constable Cash has about 26 mental health deputies that work at Precinct 1 Constable's office. Wow. And as a sheriff's office, we have 5 or 6.
Wow.
So, you know, across the county, it's a big emphasis on mental health, where it hasn't been over, you know, decades. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think that, like, you should be a student of the game, no matter what your career is, what mm-hmm. your profession is. Mm-hmm. I was a collegiate softball umpire, and my daughter grew up playing softball, and mm-hmm. wife played softball, and I learned how to be the best umpire I could by going to camps, studying, and watching better mm-hmm. umpires. You know, mm-hmm. when you weren't umpiring, study others to see how they do it and adopt things that they do that work.
Yeah.
And law enforcement's the same way. Mm-hmm. I look for mentors. I look for good counsel. Talk with Joe Corley, Tommy Gage, Guy Williams, mm-hmm. all the former sheriffs here. 36 years of Montgomery County sheriffs I talked to.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
And, you know, seek their advice and counsel on things that are happening within the office to see if they've seen it before mm-hmm. and talk with other sheriffs.
And chances are those guys have seen it before.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the vast majority of it. Yeah. You know, there's, what was it, Mark Twain said, there's no such thing as new ideas, mm-hmm. you know, only old ideas have been reimagined.
Yeah.
I'll tell you know, human behavior probably hasn't changed a whole lot. People still, they do crimes. They lie, they cheat, they steal, they drink, they have drug addiction, they have problems. And, you know, unfortunately in our business, that's the problems we deal with that become criminal behavior.
You just see people who, you know, at their worst, having a bad day. There'd be a whole lot of things that just sort of, you know, piled on that day. And then they, you know, they make a mistake.
I think so. I think most people are good and that they make mistakes. You know, someone... It becomes intoxicated and drives. They made a mistake. It's not their normal behavior. Maybe there's some extenuating circumstances, depression, divorce, bad day at work, mm-hmm. an argument with their boss, something that drives them to do something that they don't normally do, and they make a mistake. And those are the people we see in our jail. They mm-hmm. make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And I guess there are those lifetime criminals, those chronic offenders and things like that. Although vast majority of people just make simple mistakes.
I know we touched on mental health. Why don't you talk about some of the initiatives you guys are working on to combat that within the system?
Within, you know, I believe since the 60s, law enforcement and jails, especially in prisons, have been the de facto mental health facilities for the state of Texas. I would stretch that to be across our nation. Mm-hmm. You know, we weren't doing as much the last probably, I would say, 10 years. We've made a bigger push in law enforcement to address mental health issues. I have a family member that has mental health issues that I've dealt with for a very long time, and kind of understood a little bit of the process about how you get people help, right. how you interact with law enforcement. Before I was a police officer, I was dealing with that. And it's, you know, after working for Constable Cash, working in mental health and having the opportunity to work with the deputies who receive specialized training, that I want folks in our community to know that if themselves personally or someone in their family is dealing with a mental health crisis, to call the Montgomery County Sheriff's Office and let us get you help. We have people that are specifically trained in dealing with mental health. I have been on barricaded subjects with our deputies, negotiating them out of homes that might want to commit suicide. They may want to commit murder and suicide, mm-hmm. dealing with those, you know, those ideas and those issues where they don't have the ability to control those emotions. And it's something they deal with, and offering that just kind gesture, talking with them, asking them questions. You can negotiate that person to come out and seek help many times.
What are some of the techniques and tools, and what kind of help is available for someone that's in having a crisis moment like that?
So at DPS, I was a crisis negotiator mm-hmm. and a master interrogator. So, you know, it's just like business or anything else. Anytime you're negotiating with someone, you have where you want them to be and where they want to be. And you're trying to get closer to the middle ground. Mm-hmm. whether it be a sales deal, whether you're negotiating someone out of a house, negotiating confession from a criminal that had committed a murder. You know, where are we going to get to so we can both be satisfied with that negotiation? Mm-hmm. And I will tell you that on the ones I've been on, most people will act out wanting help. They may say something to someone. They may project their intentions to do something. And it's our obligation as family members, friends, community members, colleagues, students, to reach out to law enforcement and let them know early what's going on so we have an opportunity to make contact with that person to determine if there's any legitimacy to a threat, a outcry for help, and work with that person to try to get them into services that are going to get them back in a better place, that have more techniques, doctors that can deal with these problems so they can either medicate or counsel or find out what it's going to take to get them to a better place.
What are some of the challenges you see in our community?
I think the thing that everybody talks about here in Montgomery County, we're growing at about 3-4% per year.
A lot of growth.
750,000 to 800,000 people are the estimates that we have for the population here. I grew up here. I think there was 150,000 people here.
Yeah.
So, you know, our roads, our bridges, our law enforcement, all of our infrastructure for the county. I know that we're working with the township on projects constantly to try to improve services being offered here. I'll tell you that we're working with our commissioner's court, working with our community to try to figure out how do we address this overcrowding issue that we have in the Montgomery County Jail. Our jail was built in 1987. And we're...
Which when you tell me that, I think, oh, that was only 15 or 20 years ago. 40.
Right. It's we're almost there, right?
Yeah.
And we're running about 1,317 beds in the Montgomery County Jail right now. When I came into office, we were at 1,253. We sought a variance from the Texas Jail Commission and was able to expand that a little. But we're running at anywhere between 100 to 120% capacity. We have people in Waller County Jail that were contracting housing to try to minimize our overcrowding issues. So we're having a study done now to determine what it might cost to build additional facilities or renovate facilities we have, to build a new facility, and then also evaluating whether we could acquire another facility to meet our immediate needs and then seek long-term solutions, 20-year solutions, you know, for our jail. Sheriff Gage had a study done in about 2005. And then this year in 2025, we commissioned another study by the Texas Jail Commission to determine how many beds do we need in Montgomery County? How many beds do we need to serve this community? And they've determined about 2,500. It's 24 and change.
So we're 1,000-ish. Short right now, then.
Yes,
more than 1,000.
More than 1,000, yeah. And we're feeling the pressure. So, I would message to the community that in order for us to keep people safe, to keep people housed properly, that we need to be working on solutions to serve the community, and we're doing it. We're doing everything we can. Our commissioners, our county judge, are working with us to figure out common sense solutions.
How, I know you spoke about you teaming up with past sheriffs to collaborate. Tell us about the collaboration we need in the community with schools, with faith leaders.
Yeah.
How important is that?
It's vitally important to the health of our community as a whole. Like I said, we might have 800,000 people living here in Montgomery County. If you don't believe it's a big place, drive it. You know, I drive around here all the time. I think we're about 1,077 square miles in Montgomery County. And, you know, East Montgomery County, West Montgomery County, the North, the Woodlands, Spring, it's very populous now. We've had lots of growth. You know, I tell folks in our community, I think back to when I was a kid, what did it take to be successful in our community and have... to share information, know where our problems were at, work together on common sense solutions. You know, I think it's important to know who your neighbors are. It's important to know, you know, if you need something, who can you call? I called my neighbors for just PVC glue, right, a cup of sugar, an egg.
Hey, we go check and see if I closed the front door.
Right.
Yes. You go on vacation and your garage door's open, or you leave and someone calls you and tells you, just having their phone numbers. I mean, that's a fundamental element to the success of our community, is knowing people in your community, and then you can take that and build on it.
That gets back to your point of, you know, get to know people.
Absolutely.
You know, your advice to your, you know, patrol officers, just get out there and meet 100%. People and get to know them.
I mean, we have great neighbors that bring in our trash cans for us to the front of the garage. I mean, it's a great thing to have and to be around.
And I'll tell you, so I worked my very first capital murder in a town called Yoakum in Lavaca County, Texas. And it was a whodunit. It was a home invasion. And I knew nothing about the community. I'd been there for 2 weeks. And so I was tasked with investigating that crime. And my best resource was my local resources. But directing them to do neighborhood canvases to find out who in that neighborhood saw something that was out of place. Who in that neighborhood are your problem children? Who causes problems where you live? You know, when I was growing up, everybody knew who the bully was. Yeah. You know, everyone knew everything about everybody because it was a small community.
Yeah.
And in school, we knew how people behaved. We knew what their tendencies were. And I will tell you, I solved that crime based off of knowing that community and getting in there, asking questions that would prompt thought, would go back and canvass it. I talked with the detective that was there, and a hairdresser called us and gave us a tip. So it was his relationship with that hairdresser and her relationship with that community that solved the crime, gave us information. And I often talk about what it takes to solve crime. And in my mind, it takes three things: information, instrumentation, and interrogation.
Wow.
With information being the single most important thing you can learn in any investigation.
And you've got to get that from talking to people.
Absolutely.
And it's important to have the community feel safe with talking with you, right?
Yes.
To build that relationship so that they would want to speak to you.
Yeah, our core values at the Sheriff's Office are service, teamwork, accountability, and respect. A STAR philosophy, or STAR core values. And it's a 5-point STAR, so I always tell them that top STAR is your North Star. That's your guiding principles that help you embrace those core values to serve this community. I put the STAR, or I am putting the STAR back on the car, where it's been for every past sheriff other than the previous. And make sure we have a STAR on our chest, a STAR on our patch, and things that are
it's just constant. A good reminder every time you see it.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and that's one thing I see is I just see sheriff's deputies being present and approachable and, talking to kids.
Yeah.
You know, just engaging with people and being around. But not being around like, oh, I'm on guard duty, but being around to say, hey, I'm a real person. I'm here to engage with you.
Right. Absolutely. I think that's important. You know, since coming into office, I've been here 9 months. And
has it only been 9 months?
9 months.
Wow.
And we've expanded our jail. Right. We've fixed our 911 problems. We're working on our statistical reporting to DPS and the federal government to put together a working group. We've evaluated efficiencies and inefficiencies in the agency to fix things that needed attention. And one of the things that goes back to what you were talking about is in the past, sheriff's deputies have been tasked with following up on investigations. I'm talking about your patrolmen, the guys or gals that are working nights, weekends, and things like that. And they work 12-hour shifts, so they can be off for multiple days in a row. Coming into office, we've reorganized the criminal investigations division, built in a span of control, accountability, and a system that allows for accountability. I think we call it court management. And it's removed all those investigations off of our patrolmen so they can be out in the streets doing the job they had to do, being visual in the neighborhoods, the shopping centers and communities, and not having to do these follow-ups on these more of low-level felonies and investigations. So they don't have to do that anymore. So you should see more of them on the street, yes. more of them interacting with our community. And our detectives are following up on those right. investigations mm-hmm. now, mm-hmm. which is somewhere, I think that's best practices. And it's working out pretty good to serve our community. So we can evaluate and look at caseloads. We can see when cases have been touched, have complainants been followed up with and called on their mm-hmm. on their crimes. So we worked really hard on those components of the sheriff's office, trying to make that a little bit better. And I hear from the community that they see more deputies today than they have in the past.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So visibility is a big thing.
I think it's the number one deterrent for criminal behavior.
What kind of crimes do you see, you know, locally and around the Woodlands and in Montgomery County?
I'm glad you asked that. Actually, so talking with some of the Woodlands Township folks yesterday, two of the biggest complaints I'm hearing, one of them is the bank jugging. I'm not sure if y'all are familiar with that.
No.
Refresh my memory on that.
So what's happening is generally lifetime criminals are conducting surveillance of banks. These guys used to do robberies. They did catalytic converter thefts. It's the same type. We call them crews, people that operate together to further their criminal enterprise or commit crimes. These bank jugging crews, what they'll do is they'll conduct surveillance of banks, either inside or outside, watch for people to go in, look for indicators that they've withdrawn money or are bringing money into the banks to rob them. I've got friends that have been robbed bringing deposits to banks from their businesses. And I've seen across our community that these bank juggers, they say, watch you go in the bank. You walk out, they follow you, and they break into your car. They rob you. They break into your home. They catch you in your driveway. These are violent criminals, and they're carrying guns. They're working in crews of multiple people. And it's I think it shocks people's conscience. If someone that you know, yourself included, is robbed, that's a traumatic experience. Mm-hmm. So coming into office, we are very keen to the fact that this is happening. I believe it's been underreported in Montgomery County as car burglaries and things mm-hmm. like that. We know what it is because we have a trained eye. I've worked with Houston Police Department, Harris County Sheriff's Office, the Department of Public Safety on these type of investigations in the past. So we put together a task force with those agencies and some more of our local agencies here in Montgomery County. And in our first 3 months, we arrested 21 bank juggers.
Wow.
That's interesting.
And I think we're up to about 31 now.
Wow.
So running proactive operations in Montgomery County to target these offenders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if they're going to target us, we target them.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We would not be doing our job if we weren't running proactive investigations. I'm proud of the work that the deputies and the detectives do on that.
Yeah.
I will tell you that these guys are brazen. None of them we've arrested have been from Montgomery County. They've all been from Harris County, and all but one of them had an extensive criminal history.
Wow.
One of them was wearing an ankle monitor sitting in a Montgomery County bank, watching people conduct business and working with it, the people outside the bank to follow them away and take their money. So I would tell people to be conscientious of your surroundings, to hide things if you're going to leave them in your car.
That's kind of the key. Almost to protecting yourself anywhere, anytime.
Yes.
Be aware.
Vigilant. There was one lady recently that called. She thought she was being followed from a bank. She called 911.
Great.
We were running an operation that day. We directed her to a safe place, and we intercepted those guys, and they were definitely going to rob her. So we were able to put them in the Montgomery County jail, where I hope they still are today. And one thing I would add to that, okay, so the bank jugging thing, I would like people to be aware of that in our community. So if you're doing business in the banks, I want you to know that you need to be watching your surroundings, looking for people that are out of place, sitting in cars, sitting inside the bank that are not doing business. And if you see someone following you, call us. Give us an opportunity to make that traffic stop and have some interaction with them. The legislature enacted a new law, a bank jugging law, on September 1st, which makes it now a felony offense to follow someone from a bank without substantially deviating from that path and possessing two criminal instruments. We which gives us the tools we need to arrest these folks and hold them accountable. So I thank the legislature for that. I will tell you that most of the people we've charged have been misdemeanors, except those that might be felon in possession of a firearm or, you know, might have conducted, actually completed a robbery. So those tools are going to help us be better at our job, because we're working with those, with our legislators, we're working with our community to determine our needs.
It's another piece of that puzzle.
Yes.
That you were talking about earlier.
100%.
All the different organizations you're working with.
The other thing, JJ, I think the other thing I'd like to talk about is the fraud. This is something that is, it's absolutely killing us financially in our communities. So I see people from every socioeconomic background, every type of person in our community can be subjected to fraud. Have either one of you received a text saying you have an unpaid toll?
Absolutely.
Got three of them yesterday morning.
Okay. Received a call that you have a warrant for your arrest.
Not received that one yet.
I did.
No way.
I did. And, you know, I want people to know we, law enforcement, we are not going to text you. The toll road authority is not going to text you and say that you need to send them money. I would like folks to know that we're not going to call you until you have a warrant. We're going to ask you for money. Anytime someone's trying to keep you on the phone and kind of create this urgency, know you're being scammed. Hang up on them, block the number. If they say they work for our office, which is a common scheme, call our office. Call the known number for the Montgomery County Sheriff's Office and speak with someone there. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your moms, your dads, your sons, your daughters, your brothers, your sisters, those you work with. We are not going to text you. And this is a prolific crime that's being, you know, that impacts our community as a whole. So thousands and thousands of dollars.
Which can be devastating for
anybody. Yeah, for folks, you know,
if you're young,
you think about
if you're old,
if you're indigent, a fixed income, retired. One more that I want to talk about is the bail bondsmen call me about this all the time. They have folks that, folks will go through our jail roster online. They'll research the families.
Because that's a public record.
Yes. And they'll say, hey, this person's in jail. I'm with a bonding company. If you'll pay this much money, I'll get them out. You don't have to come up here. And, you know, I get calls about that weekly probably. So even if someone is in jail, you know you have a family member in jail, and they're calling you, hang up on them. Call a known number for a bonding company that you know and trust. Do not let them pressure you into giving them money over the phone. Just hang up on them. Block them. You can call the sheriff's office and make a report. And if there's some legitimacy to it, we will get back with you on that. So the fraud, the bank jugging, things like that, those are pretty prolific crimes here. We've been running a lot of proactive task forces on the holidays. I think on Labor Day, we arrested 60 DWIs in Montgomery County. And so
we just saw a report about a wrong way driver.
Yes.
45.
Yesterday morning. So it was one fatality. Which hasn't happened in a long time. I will tell you that we've worked hard on expanding our traffic enforcement in the county, working with Texas Department of Public Safety, the cities, and the constables to do more traffic, to be more available to help folks and move wrecks off the roadway quicker. I'm looking at some things with a towing enforcement program, which is very unpopular, about using proximity to dispatch towing companies to accidents instead of using a rotation or a first wrecker. We found that within about 7 minutes, we can get a tow truck without the speeding, the stacking folks up, driving reckless, and things like that.
To the scene when it's already a mess. And
So continuing to evaluate technology, continue to embrace new ideas and work with other jurisdictions to find out what's working for them. And, you know, you don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Like you said, best practices.
Be aware. So those are some things.
We understand that law enforcement is tough. It can be tough. Tell us how you and your deputies stay grounded. What do you guys do for your
I would say that most of us are fairly resilient people. I think that I tell people all the time, there's so many type A personalities in law enforcement. You know, those guys are usually the toughest folks, right? They're like your military veterans and things, that they can shoulder a lot. not just their problems, but other people's problems. And they can bear the things that they see. But when it gets to the point that they are questioning that, having issues with that, we have support groups, we have counselors available. We check on each other and try to make sure that we have support groups to support those officers. We can go see mental health professionals. The agency will pay for them to go see that. We have a mental health coordinator. We also have chaplains that come in the jail and work outside the jail to just talk about spirituality, just talk about the things that affect us every day. I talk to my friends and my family. My wife is my number one supporter. Mm-hmm. And we talk about things that affect our lives, our children's lives, mm-hmm. or my professional life, and stay strong as a family unit. So that's vitally important, is the health within your family. I can tell you having a spouse, a partner in life mm-hmm. is probably the best thing I've ever done. Sherry is a huge supporter of mine, and she was a college athlete. She's resilient. She's strong. I think that during my campaign, the things that we learned through softball, running tournaments, and scheduling things and doing things helped me immensely with my fundraising and my event planning and stuff. So
now, logistics is a huge part of a campaign.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And having the courage to pull the trigger. I think a lot of people will. Mm-hmm. What for somebody to, have an idea, discuss a possibility, but to do it is something else.
Actually act on it.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Or to change careers. Hey, I'm going to quit my job and I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
That takes a lot of courage.
Passion and courage. Absolutely.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, I think that mental resiliency is something that there are thousands and probably thousands of books written on it. Mm-hmm. Right. And we, continue to study it to be better, to be more aware. I will tell you, through my master's program, I learned a lot about myself, my own personality, and how to deal with people individually and not stereotype, and not, it's easy to paint a broad paintbrush, but it's harder to drill down on details and deal with individual issues. And it's something I work diligently on in our office. We have almost 1,100 employees at the sheriff's office.
I didn't know it was that large.
And we are the 7th largest sheriff's office in the state of Texas.
Wow.
And I think we're about the 10th largest county in Texas.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So it's a big place. And there's lots going on. Yeah. And it's fun for me. Even the challenges are fun for me. I like... I have a little bit of ADHD. I do not like to sit still. I'd like to go. And I'm surprised I've been sitting down this long, to be honest with you.
How can the community help the sheriff's office? Is there any way that people can volunteer time to you?
Yeah,
talk to us about that.
Yeah, so we have folks that volunteer their time. There's the community groups like EquiSearch, different search and rescue groups, different, all of our chaplains are volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
They help in the jail and outside the jail. We have a very good program in our veterans pod where chaplains go in, and we have military veterans that sign up for a program that they can graduate from. They can take a look at their benefits to see if they're getting everything they have coming to them as military veterans. Provide them with skills and coping mechanisms to reduce recidivism, to help them be better community members. I will tell you that. I have influence over the things there in the jail, but just being a good person in your community, like I said, knowing your neighbors, not being afraid to get out to meet people, to put yourself at risk, to expand your network, mm-hmm. to know what normal is. And when things are not normal, when it comes to law enforcement, when it comes to mental health, reach out to those resources immediately and give us the opportunity to answer the call and help you. Something that you may dismiss as, it's probably nothing. A friend of mine texted me the other night about 11 o'clock at night and said, hey, my friend's daughter had someone on her porch at her apartment and it just didn't seem normal.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't want to call because she's going to be embarrassed. Mm-hmm. I said, she absolutely needs to call us. She needs to make a report.
Mm-hmm.
Let us come out, take a look. If we determine it's nothing, there's no harm, no foul. Mm-hmm. Although, what if it is something? Mm-hmm. What if it's a simple as a peeping Tom.
Yeah.
A rapist, a burglar. If we get the opportunity to interact with that person, we may be able to determine through that information, that interview with them, if they're involved in criminal activity. So I would tell people not to be afraid to call us, to not dismiss things in our community as nothing. It's that you know, and it's not a gut feeling. It's based off what's normal, what you do every day. You know, if you come out of your house to get into your vehicle and your door's jarred open, that's not normal, right? You weren't unloading groceries. You weren't distracted. You know you locked your car. You know, you look in there and it's been burglarized. Call. Chances are yours wasn't the only one that got burglarized.
Yeah. And they can help you create patterns.
Yes.
And then or see things.
I think we embrace technology today too. You know, with almost everyone I know has cameras. We have the flock cameras that we put up in different places that read license plates and things like that to help find vehicles that might be conducting, they're involved in illegal activity. We had I was with some of the Woodlands guys the other day at the Catholic Church over here on Saturday, and was talking with them, and Harris County Precinct 4 had a pursuit come up to Montgomery County. I think they went, I can't remember the street they went down, Woodlands Parkway or something, driving the wrong way. Oh, and they terminated the pursuit. They did not have a license plate for the vehicle, but they had a description of it. We were able to go back, look at cameras, and determine and identify the vehicle, find it, get the license plate, and follow up on the crime to charge the person. So, you know, information is the single biggest thing we'll get. Knowing your community, knowing those norms, those things that are happening, let's work together. It's actually my motto, we're better together.
Yes.
And
That's why we're doing this program. It's because it's about the power of the collective us. Mm-hmm. That we all figure out a way to be a productive part of the puzzle.
Yeah, and I think that it's important. I think back to, you know, when I was growing up, it wasn't uncommon for both parents to work. Mm-hmm. It's not uncommon today. You know, back when moms would stay home, they knew every kid in the neighborhood.
Yep.
They knew everything that was going on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're working harder today as a society than I think we ever have. We put a lot of measure on success through finances. We put a lot of measure on success about things.
Yes.
But I can't think of anything that is more precious than just the health of our community and working together to make sure we're protecting each other, that we're working together to be safe. And I'll tell you that everywhere I go, the number one thing people know is, are we safe? And we're safe because we do know our community. We know each other. You know, law enforcement works off the authority of people and the support of our community. And we want to be there to serve our community. So I would tell you that the better we know each other, the better we know our communities, the better we work together, the safer we'll be.
And don't be afraid to call if you see something missing. And I tell you, every interaction that we've had with the sheriff's deputy, that there's no judgment or anything. They just come out and they just want to help, and they're extremely professional and efficient and courteous about doing their job.
And I hope that we can continue to be that way. You know, I worry about staffing. As we grow, we did like a workload analysis this year. We need more people. You know, the harder our people are worked, the more they're spread thin, the harder it is to keep that that good disposition, because of the work. Anybody that's overworked is it wears on you, right?
Yeah.
I do appreciate the fact that our community, our commissioner's court, gave the officers in Montgomery County probably the biggest raise they've ever had approved this year. Over the next 4 years, it'll be about a 36% increase. So I cannot thank the community enough for their support. I cannot thank our commissioners, our county judge enough for the support that they've shown for law enforcement here. It's a token of appreciation. It's recognition of a professional law enforcement agency that we're able to recruit and train and retain people to serve our community for a very long time.
I know JJ and I, whenever we see law enforcement, we like to engage. Don't be afraid to engage.
Right.
Say hi, ask them about their day. It builds trust and a relationship with
Absolutely.
Law enforcement.
Community trust is a big thing.
Well, thank you. This has been a great experience again to find out more about what's going on in Montgomery County and with the Sheriff's Department.
Is there anything else you would like to touch base on while we have you here?
We've talked about a lot. I just hope that we've covered the topics that you would like to cover. If there's anything that that y'all would like to ask or anything like that, let me know. I would continue to thank the community for their support and for this opportunity to be your elected sheriff. It's probably the biggest professional joy of my life. I enjoy it. I like to do it. And I want to do it for a long time.
Thank you.
Thank y'all.
Thank you. And thank you for tuning in to another episode of The Power of Us. Don't wait until you're in crisis. Get connected now. The Sheriff's Office is here to serve you. And please don't forget to go on our Facebook page at The Power of Us Podcast. Like, share, and follow. It's very important. You never know who may be in need of the resources we have available. Thank you.